think it's quite important that he studies. Well, anybody studies, but he in particular, if I may add. I hope pinky tells him, yeah, maybe pinky. But on a more serious note, Pandey's sick, right? And she's very contrite about not coming because she's missing David May here. She's, you know, all the adrenal that flows through her, she used it up here, and now she hasn't got a chance to unleash. Then Mr. Lee told me when I was exchanged with him, you know, you guys need so much of energy and time. The issue for this is the one thing.
He's
doing
a lot here, you were saying.
But that was
the time. This one is not here.
No, but then I come late.
Unfortunately, his aunt passed away last week, and then there's also his brother-in-law at a motorcycle accident today. He explained to me he's going to be at a funeral this week, so we will just remind me to write him a note. So can I just take it out of committee on our, I can write on our behalf to say we note the losses of the Rivenin's family and we convey our deepest condolences. Just remind me to send a letter. Dickie Levy's also sick. We've lost Makosi at ANC, but we've lost two very good members, Makosi and Sikri, so both got experience in the area of finances and economics. And I have spoken to our chief whip last night, with people ideally with technical skills that are relevant to this committee. Having said that, I also now must explain that, you know, the prospects of having world socialism are greater than getting two committees in this parliament to meet, even after we agree on a date. So these people, Tandy in particular, my sister, always says, yeah, let's have a meeting with so-and-so committee and so on. You know the rule now, and we don't care who comes and who doesn't. I'm never going to allow any more person from any party to say, no, you know, let's discuss this. It's not going to happen. Not under my watch, I have a long look here. It's not going to happen. We discussed this issue. We said any member proposing a joint meeting with other committee members has to take responsibility for facilitating that meeting. And that person must be from the majority party. That's the rule here, right? Now, secondly, minority parties obviously must go to their members in those committees. If the matter is health and has got financial implications, you must go. If your members are lazy in that committee, please don't come here. Can you minute all this? There's nothing to discuss. I'm just giving an overview. We have no time for all of that. The first thing I'd to alert you to is the program's here, but now since a few of us are here, I wanted to discuss the program. I think we should postpone it to next week, where we're likely to have you know, our two new members and a bigger committee. But just to mention to you, the Insurance Act came to this committee in November 2015, and we are unable to proceed with it. Our priority this term is the Money Bills Act and the Rates and Monetary Bill. We have a new parliamentary liaison officer, interestingly not here yet, but I will meet with him. Can we arrange a meeting? Because with Cindy, she was on call 24 hours a day. And you really got things done very fast. And the same has to apply now. We don't have the energy and time. Furthermore, we are getting amounts of mail and matters to deal with outside of committee meetings that we cannot manage in the current committee. Sibo is once again not available. And once again, the talent that has to pay a disproportionate burden. I have taken a decision that I will not be doing any more administrative work as from this morning. So the committee's work will be slowed down considerably because I've been spending 30 to 35% of my time doing administrative work. It's over. So, from now on, you have a problem with the way the committee functions, write to the Secretary of Parliament, not the Speaker, write to the Secretary of Parliament. We cannot manage this committee. I cannot do any more. Alan, it's over. No more am I doing any more administrative. I'm not paid to do that. I've done it for the last 2.5 years, and I have had about 30 meetings over 2.5 years to ask for the necessary support. I must tell you, Sakele, Antonia, excellent team. Gloria, yeah, that team. You know, it's very interesting. Normally, it's the administration side that's okay and the research side that's, let's say, weaker. I'm very privileged as a chair, but I have a very good research team. And we we've got brilliant Alan here, but very little else support, as if you don't know this. So Alan, I'm sorry to say, it's over from today. What's the date? Can you minute that? I will be doing no more administrative work. I've got many other responsibilities. Chairing this committee is merely one. So having said that, well, all of these things I've raised with you before, I'm merely reporting on decisions taken. To remind members, these decisions were taken in 4 or 5 meetings last year. Can we please have all the minutes sorted out in 2 weeks? And that's another saga. And then vote on them, right? But presumably all those decisions are there. This one I want to see, because I want this to be plastered on the wall. Everywhere you go, make a big thing, I'm not allowing this one. And in terms of the rules, I'm clear. You know what? These decisions are taken. There's nothing in the rules that says a committee chair has to do administrative work. So that's over as from this morning. Having said that, welcome everybody. Now, yes?
So just on your comment, thank you for extending your condolences to the committee, condolences to our families. We very much appreciate that gesture.
Well, what's the point? Well, if somebody's family in this committee experiences a bereavement, it's normal and human. No need to thank me for it. But anyway, it's absurd. But you can say absurd things. There's no law against it.
I'm delighted to see that you're starting the term on a good note. The second point, Chair, is about the program. I agree with you that we should probably discuss the program when we've got a full committee. But there is one issue which I'd like to raise or seek some clarification on. Did we receive an invitation from National Treasury? You are the co-host of the World Economic Forum, which takes place in Durban from tomorrow. Did we receive an invitation through you or to attend the World Economic Forum? And if we didn't, I think it's actually something that we should raise with the Treasury.
Not that I'm particularly good either. Yeah, but no, you know, if a committee, if the rule is, well, I don't know, this is the way I chair anyway. If we get an invitation to the committee, then I have to table it here, as far as I'm concerned. It's not mine. But you realize that I play many roles, and I often get invited to be a discussant or a facilitator, which has got nothing to do. In fact, I've just been invited to Hamburg now. And I tell them, but this has got nothing to do with finance. That's the biggest role I played. They said, no, we want you. I said, no, it doesn't work like that. It's another committee chair. Now they wrote back to me and they said, no, we want you. Now the Mauritian Parliament asked me to come and speak to them about how Parliament functions. That has got nothing. I told you when I went to London last year, the Commonwealth Parliamentary Association, because you remember, I've been around for thousands of years, and I'm an academic and I write. I have the advantage that English is my first language, so at least in the English-speaking world, I get read now and then. Now, the opposition parties may think I'm an idiot, and all, which is their right. It's only when they accuse me of corruption that I get really upset. I mean, what am I corrupt about? So I get invited like that, and that I'm not accountable. I should mention something else to you. Sometimes the Speaker's office decides to take a delegation, which is something I want to report on. And just to let you know, because I think that's fair, I used to be vice president of the Parliamentary Network on the World Bank. And they decided to, well, they have their conference around the spring and winter meetings, and they invite the Speaker's office, and then they asked Charles and me to go with Cedric Frolic. But they also asked me to be a discussant and a facilitator on illicit financial flows. We are seen, by the way, as a major country in the development and our financial intelligence center poll is regarded as a very good quality, whatever people might say. And also some of the noises we're making here in Parliament are reaching. You see, there are agencies that I think, you know, I don't know how that's a killer, you know, I don't know. They see illicit financial flows, whatever it's in Mongolia or Alaska or something, it pops up. Because they seem to know what we're doing. So, just to let you know, I'll switch this off because I don't really want to, I don't know if it's going to.
Has he got off mic?
He doesn't want that recorded.
I can't just go and stand in some conference. I mean, a lot of times, for the audience,
I don't know that parliamentarians go. What I know is that the executive goes, civil servant, and they have parallel structures of what I think happens. I went to Davos in 2014 as Minister of Communications, and they had like civil society, like you could end up there at the ANC Women's Meeting. So, and I must tell you, I was very surprised at the quality of what came out of it. Obviously, I'm a Marxist. I never would have thought that I would be so enchanted. I must tell you that World Economic Forum in Davos, they were talking about the fourth industrial revolution. It's fascinating, right? And so this is the African equivalent. Now, there, MPs don't go, I know. They have a civil society structure, a ministerial structure, and they have a official structure. Sometimes we all meet. So I don't think they invite MPs. But personally, I don't know. Is this the view of the committee that was right? Can we discuss this next week? Because I'd rather have the... If it's the mandate of the committee, I have no choice. Whether I agree with it or not, I'll write. But personally, I don't think... Well, I don't know. Who wants to really go? Well, yeah, well, it doesn't matter. Maybe I don't want to go, but others want to go. Fine. So can we leave it like this, David? Next week, put the issue before us. If we agree, I'll write to Malusi, the minister, and say, look, you know... And so, but remember, it's not his decision. Eh? It has to go to the World Economic Forum. And if they invite us... The difference with the IMF and World Bank thing is there is a parliamentary structure. It's called the Parliamentary Network on the World Bank. And our very own Trevor Manuel was one of the people that pushed for it in the early period, 2003, 2004. And in this very parliament, in 2007, I was the main organizer. I think it was 2007. We organized the conference here. But there you see they have a parliamentary network. Then they had a civil society thing. And then they have the ministerial thing. Right, fine. So we'll put it on the agenda. What else do you want to raise?
Chair, I'm quite happy to raise it next week, as per your suggestion. Just on the World Bank Parliamentary Forum, why is that not a bipartisan forum?
It's open to anybody and everybody. But when the Speaker's office decides on choosing a delegation, I don't know how they do it. They're trying to do it. Yeah, I don't know.
I'll ask our chief whip to inquire.
Yeah, but the thing is that, remember, there are also specific invitations that come, right? And if you're a chair of a committee, at this stage, it's not that it's bipartisan. Interesting, the answer is going to be straightforward. I can tell you this. You won't get away with it. Straightforward. They invite the chairperson. So Charles and I were asked as chairpersons to go. If either of us was not available or didn't want to go, then we will say, okay, can Pule go, or can Makosi go, or will Makosi Pinky go, and so on. So actually, okay, it's actually an invitation to chairs of committee, like the one that happened in London last year. I was invited to be a keynote speaker. They didn't invite me because I'm from a party. They invited me because I'm chairing finance, and this is an area we've taken up. Okay, having said that, if you look at the program, there are two changes made, right? And you see, I don't know what all the fuss was about. We were going to have it anyway. The thing is that you see, you must remember, and I'm not going to cover this ground. I spoke to Al Fleeson really briefly, right? The way it works, when I was chairing public enterprise, we checked all this out with Frank's colleagues. Although the board chair and the CEO of a state-owned entity are answerable to Parliament, the ultimate authority that we deal with is the shareholder. I hope people are listening, the shareholder. It's the minister that comes. We had the problem with Alec Irwin at the time, and we got legal clarity. Then Alec came with this proposal, shareholder management book, which Lynn Brown is still processing years later, where we're going to make that clearer. Because Parliament wanted to know who is ultimately accountable to it. Both Parliament's lawyers, I must find that stuff, and Alec Irwin's lawyers said, actually it's the minister, because the shareholder is the government, and he in that case, and now Lynn in this case, is accountable, right? So what I told Mr. Leach is, look, calm down. Firstly, the first week is, you know, secondly, you can't interfere in the labor relations issue. No, we're not going to do anything. We have no rights. It's between the management and the union. We've been through that before. Satawu came to Parliament in 2007 with their fight with SAA at the time. Or was it Transnet? Maria Ramos was there. And we said, yeah, we can hear both sides, but we're not a mediation. We just heard both sides and said, thank you. Yeah, we're not CCMA. So on that issue, I think Alf was just plain wrong. Well, having SAA here, we agreed. It cut out of us two. We can't go ahead. And so we convening. And the first period now, we thought, well, the new minister should be briefed. properly, although he had SAA as a public enterprise minister. So we just gave some space. So we will have SAA twice this quarter. Then on the matter of bringing Inklemeza successor here, I think we should be realistic, right? We need a bit more time. She needs to fit into that role. It's still a gray area whether Inklemeza is going to be there or not. We have put that date to be confirmed because we felt that it's important that the police committee be here to give us follow-up on these issues. So I think that date should be reviewed. Is that? So the 9th of May is the minister appearing. Right? So we sent the program out to you. So what I'm saying is, apart from that, you've seen the changes in the program, but I really want to plead with people that we really try to finish the insurance because it's gone on for too long. And so we must move fast with the other bills. I spoke to Momo, I'm waiting for a date for the rates and monetary bill, but I don't think they'll be ready by the time of the public hearing. Remember, I confer with them and say, hey, when are you going to bring the bill? Why can't you bring it sooner or bring it later because there's no need for it, right? Once they give me a date, then I'll plan the program. Now, unfortunately, I don't think they're going to deliver because the new minister needs to be briefed. You can't expect a new minister to come in, even though he's old in the system, and know about rates and monetary issues, right? So we should allow for some flexibility with the program because of the change in the, and then the DG is leaving soon, right? So all these things mean that we have to be a bit realistic. So I think we should slide in the insurance bill as much as possible. Okay, so it's a very tentative program. And let's move on the matter of the Money Bills Act. Regrettably, the two committees have fallen away, so we will spend not the full 3 hours. What we really want to do is move forward now, right? So, now, I know you've covered this before. Can you give us an overview of the issues? And then let's move on to what your proposals are. Now, you know what our concerns are. One is the timing. We just cannot accept that we must be squeezed into that time frame, right? Two is we're concerned about some of the onerous requirements, right? That means that you cannot actually change a money bill. But on the other hand, we can't just willy-nilly, out of a populist disposition, change a money bill, right? So we need to find the right balance. Three is we need to ask whether we need two reports on the American fiscal framework and the, I mean, do we have capacity to do that? And in any case, both debates overlap. So I think we should have one report that looks at both the amended fiscal framework for that year and the three-year cycle, so that we have one debate in the House, because it's boring. We cover the same issues, we say the same things, and so on. Right? The ANC, we've discussed in 2014. We are fully clear, unless now people change their mind. We don't have the capacity to do it. We have more important things to do, frankly, because it has no material effect. In other words, when I say we have more important things to do, we're not saying the fiscal framework is not important. We are saying we have more important things to do than repeat the same stuff in two debates within the space of 4 weeks. Right? So that's what our position is. So let's hear from you. Those are amongst the issues. Yeah. Now we're going to move, eh? Because we must pass this bill before the money, what's this MTBPS comes. Our target is to finish before we look at the MTBPS. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair, members, colleagues. Thank you very much. I'm going to have to just deal with the presentation I prepared and that was handed out in light of what you said, Chairperson. So, yes, there's an opening page. What I wanted to do, and I'll go through it and you mention it, just a quick background, what we've discussed as priority areas that flows from the background and then some other consequential matters. Perhaps we don't have to deal with that today. Time is not on our side. So just the background, Chair, we know we had the workshop on 8th of February. We were instructed then to develop a discussion document. That document was, if I'm not mistaken, sent to members and staff. It is work in progress, and it's very broad, very high level. So my purpose today is not actually to deal with that document. That document just lies the foundation. I want to deal with the specific, concrete suggestions we have to do the money bill, because what we've done in the discussion document is just set out the process which guides us. There's a technical task team made up of officials. There was a suggestion that the chairs meet the presiding officer, that specifically on the budget office issues, and I'll deal with that later. And the time frame we're working in is to, as you said, to do the MTBPS of this year in terms of the amended act. So that's the process part. The substantive part deals with priority areas in the bill. Well, in the act that will be taken up in the draft bill to amend. And those issues are the timelines, the sequencing. Some of us may refresh you, the fiscal framework, then dealing with the division of revenue and then with the appropriation, and then the budget office, management and function of the budget office. Those are the priority areas so far that we've identified. In terms of the timelines, Chairperson, what the purpose of this slide, it's a little bit too detailed for my liking, but I thought let me put in as much detail as I can so that members can refer to this. The idea is to read this slide with the draft bill that was handed out. So what we then have, I mean, and I didn't put bullet there because it takes up too much space, but you have your BRRR that says it must be adopted, your oversight report. It must be adopted before you adopt the reports on the NTBPS. I don't see any problems with that so far. So we left that unchanged. Yes. What the Act requires is that you report on the NTBPS before you adopt your reports on the... you report on your BRRRs before you adopt your reports on the NTBPS, so that whoever is, whichever committee is busy with your NTBPS can see what other committees have found in terms of the performance of departments. And remember, the NTBPS is forward-looking, so it will shape the opinion of both the Finance and Appropriations Committees when they deal with the NTBPS and the Houses to say, well, this is what we expect in next year's budget, but we have a problem with that because of the performance of a department that you've picked up in your BRRR report. The NTBPS itself, there were some issues with the bill as with the act as it's framed at the moment, which says that you must report 30 days after the date, which was an anomaly because we wanted to put it within that 30 days after tabling and not after. So that needed first of all correction, and secondly, do we want that 30 days there? And there's two ways of looking at it. One is just individually to say, does this provision speak to what Parliament wants to do? And secondly, timeframes as a whole in the Act and setting out the procedure for considering money bills, including the NTBPS, do we want to have this rigid timelines for Parliament? And the question I'm going to deal with also then rigid timelines for ministers to respond. And I am acting here as the lawyer for Parliament, so I've taken Parliament's side on this, and I will explain that, Chairperson. But in the NTBPS, and as well as all the other timeframes applying to Parliament, we've changed it almost to the radical part, to say, let programming decide on it. We have a Chief Whip's Forum, we have the Programming Committee, they meet weekly. They can decide. There is consultation with the leader of government business. There's consultation with government, in other words, or the executive part, when we put out these programs. And I think that would be the best solution. We have a mechanism that works well. Chair, I will not do my duty here if I don't mention that when this act was drafted and the timelines were put in there, it was for a specific purpose. It was set there so that you can't do programming around it, but you have to comply with it. But I think time has taught us a lesson in that regard to say, well, look, you have to be able to adapt to circumstances and you have to allow certain areas to be more flexible than other areas. And in my view, the fiscal framework is a classic example that, especially in these the last 2 to 3 years, we needed more time with the fiscal framework than into the division of revenue. So those were issues there. So that is the suggestion to say, just to leave the timelines open, and that must be programmed by Parliament. We are bound in any event by certain realities, which is that you have to pass the budget. Okay, and in that regard, we have left certain areas in there. If we go to the last paragraph, the appropriation must be passed 4 months after the financial year begins. Now, we can take that away as well, but it sort of speaks to what's in the Public Finance Management Act, that you can spend 45% of the budget of the next year before you've passed your appropriation bill for that year. And thereafter, I think it's 8% per month that you can. Of course, you can't do new programs. You can only do what is there already. So it speaks a little bit about that, to say to Parliament, at least pass the budget for that financial year before we get into that area where it's a month-on-month basis looking at the finances. So that is one area where, in any case, Parliament will be constrained, not to just sit back and say, well, we'll deal with the budget whenever we feel like it. I'm using a facetious example. But there is this risk, if we take away the time frame, that you are rudderless, or at least planning time. That's not my experience in this Parliament anymore. So, Chair, if I move on to the fiscal framework, section 8, the 16 days to report and to adopt report, again, we've just removed that. But then we get, I make that comment there, we get, if there's a change to the fiscal framework, subsection 6b says the minister must give at least 2 days to respond. I've left that in there. I think it's an issue that the committee can discuss. At one stage, we thought it would be best also to remove that and give the minister reasonable time. But I think because it's set out as a minimum requirement, the committee can decide to lengthen it, depending on the context or the complexity of the adjustments or the changes that are proposed. And the minister can also come back to the committee and say, look, I need to consult further. There's some other departments or other ministers involved. And it is an area that one can discuss and solve in that way. But I thought, in terms of Parliament's programming, let's leave the timelines for ministers to respond so that Parliament is in control of the process. But it's something that can be discussed. It's just a suggestion at the moment, not to change those, but to change all the other time frames. MTBP, as I've spoken about, the fiscal framework, division of revenue, 30 days to pass it. And again, we've just taken that out. One looks at the provisions. I can read the clauses in the draft, but if it's necessary. Just to indicate that this is just the way it's going to be. Parliament must decide when to pass it. And when we get to sequencing, I'll also show that we've kept sequencing there, but in a different way. So it's not that we can pass the division of revenue before we've considered the fiscal framework. In case members were thinking that, I'll deal with the sequencing just after this. The same I can say about the appropriation bill, Chairperson. The appropriation bill, we've left the 4 months in there. I've made that comment there in subsection 10.5, which deals with conditional appropriation. I've left that unchanged. Again, the committee can decide that. The conditional appropriation just says that the committee can decide to appropriate certain programs conditionally. In other words, either a condition must be met before the money is transferred, or it's ring-fenced, so to speak. But in that regard, there's requirements of how it must be dealt, the minister to respond within 2 days, that we've left, and there's an issue where should Parliament decide to release the funds which we've withheld because of a certain condition, the committee can report on it to say the House should release those funds. There's a 7-day period set out there, which is very tight. We've never dealt with it. And just because I don't have any information or data on whether it will work or not, I thought, let me not touch it. If it's a problem, one must look at it again. But we've not dealt with that in the past. So I cannot actually sit here today and say to the committee, it poses a problem, like the division of revenue and the appropriation bills processing is a problem. Chair, just to refresh our minds, the issue of sequencing, as I said before, the way it works at the moment is very linear. You must deal with the fiscal framework, that's give you the policy direction, and when you then, after you've adopted the fiscal framework, only then does the division of revenue bill and the appropriation bill get referred. And one can only deal with the appropriation bill once the division of revenue bill is passed by Parliament. So that's a very linear structure. So what we're suggesting is that these three instruments get put into the Parliament mechanism, and the sequencing then is in terms of reporting. So you cannot report, the committee cannot report to the House on the division of revenue bill before the fiscal framework is passed, but it can consider, it can work with it, because it's the appropriation committee. Yes. And the same with the appropriation bill. But you cannot report on the division of revenue until the fiscal framework is passed, and you cannot report on the appropriation bill before the division of revenue bill is passed. So the fiscal framework must be passed, then you report on the division of revenue bill. The division of revenue bill is passed. After that, you can report on the appropriation bill. And the requirement that there must be consistency with the fiscal framework is still there. So that is a requirement. What it will require, of course, is research, legal, whoever is assisting committees, specifically actually the budget office, because they are mandated to assist the full committee, to be on top of this and to be able to share information should there be an amendment. I mean, from where we are today and my experience over the last few years, it hasn't happened that we have a radical amendment, that suddenly we are in the area where we need advice whether there's a consistency with the fiscal framework or not, or what the implications can be. The closest we came was with the I think with what we were said with the unemployment insurance, or it wasn't that the unemployment, it was changing the tax regime that we thought will be impacted on the total fiscal framework, and prolonging or putting it out to year. So it's, at the moment, it is a little bit uncharted waters, but it's, I think for Parliament's program, it will work. This slide, Chairperson, in terms of the sequencing, can start from the bottom just to ensure we have the consistency with the fiscal framework, because that's the risk. If we're looking at risk, if we take away the time frames as well as the sequencing, the risk is there that a committee can deal with the Division of Revenue Bill or the Appropriation Bill without knowing what's happening with the fiscal framework, because they're in separate streams. Fiscal framework is in the finance, the other two is in appropriations. So to manage that risk, well, we have this thing, it must be consistent, but the mechanisms to ensure that that's there is something that we'll have to pay attention to. In both the Division of Revenue Bill and the Appropriation Bill, we've taken away the requirement that they can only be referred after the passing of the fiscal framework or the adoption of the fiscal framework. So they can be referred immediately. But then the reporting, as I said before, has changed. The Committee on Appropriations can only report to the National Assembly once the NCOP and the NA has passed the fiscal framework. And then on the appropriation bill, the same thing will apply, but in this instance, you can only report after the revenue bill is passed by both parties. So there's still that requirement, but it will loosen up a lot of space for committees to commence work and to do certain things without members having to raise issues of non-compliance and legality. And I had to advise a few times on whether it is legal to receive a briefing from the Minister of Finance or from Treasury, or to have public hearings while the Division of Revenue Bill is not passed, or while the fiscal framework is not passed in the case of the Division of Revenue Bill. And I think all of these questions are very valid, but it actually hamstrings Parliament's work. Chairperson, the adjustments budget, I've put it on a separate slide just because of all the information again that's there, but it's the same issue. We're dealing here with the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill and the Adjustments Appropriation Bill. Again, the sequencing has been changed to deal with the reporting. The bills can be referred, although the fiscal framework is not passed, but the bills can't be passed before the fiscal framework is passed. Committees can't report on them before the fiscal framework is passed. There was an issue in subsection 12.6 on the first bullet, where the Act requires that the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill is referred to a joint sitting. Now that creates a little bit of ambiguity. It's a Section 76 bill. It cannot be approved by a joint sitting of two committees. And it was just an uncertainty that was experienced. I think if the House or the committees want to confer to save time, that is allowed in any event in terms of the rules. So we don't have to have a requirement in the Act. And that requirement has caused more trouble than not, because sometimes I've been asked whether, if it's referred not to a joint sitting, will there still be compliance? Will there be a challenge, a possibility of a challenge? Hence, we thought, let's take that out. We can always put it back in, not in the Act, but in terms of rules, committees can meet and deal with it and then report separately. As I said before, all the dates for ministers, those minimum dates to give at least 2 days for response in terms of the fiscal framework, and 4 days for a ministerial response in the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill. All of those have been kept. So it's, of course, open to discussion. The committee can say we don't have to have it there, but at the moment, at least it gives Parliament some type of control to say, look, in terms of the Act, you have to respond. And unless there's a good reason, we would require you at least to do it 4 days, because we are short of time, and if you can't, then at least speak about it. Chair, an interesting thing. This is something new. I just see as a mistake there. Go back there. A little spelling mistake there. Sorry about that. The first bullet, framework, should be framework. Chair, an issue was raised last time, and I'm not sure if we understood it correctly, but it is an interesting discussion nevertheless, that in Section 13, we deal with other money bills. I think Honourable Tandy raised the issue that, and Honourable Tobias raised the issue that we cannot actually go beyond the fiscal framework. As soon as Parliament has adopted the fiscal framework, Parliament can't do anything beyond that. Okay. Now, that's not a problem when we're dealing with budget books. But between the prince and I, we discussed that what does it mean when someone says you want to go beyond that? So it's possibly in between, in the budget phase. For instance, fees must fall. Suddenly we realize, well, we had it with Eskom as well, we want to have an Eskom appropriation bill. And this is going to go beyond the fiscal framework. Now, Section 60 of the Public Finance Management Act allows National Treasury to spend money in an emergency situation. And that's not constrained by the adopted fiscal framework. Now, a money bill like that will come to Parliament, and we will have to deal with that in terms of Section 13 of the Act, which is very wide, very loose. It just requires public consultation, response from ministers. It doesn't have strict time frames like the budget issue. But even when Parliament gets that money bill, we can't amend it, actually, beyond the fiscal framework. So National Treasury can, but we can't. So we thought there must be a way, if we understood the question correctly, to loosen that constraint on Parliament to say, notwithstanding anything in this provision, in Section 13, because Section 13 is clear, we must show that we're still consistent with the fiscal framework. So the amendment we proposed in subsection 6 of 13 would say that you can go beyond the fiscal framework and make amendments under certain circumstances, because we can't have that as an open policy. So we've looked at the wording of Section 16 of the Public Finance Management Act, and from where we are at the moment, there's two questions. One, is it necessary that we have it in there? Do we want to get that authority for Parliament to deal with it in that way? And two, if so, the constraints we try to build in there that is based on Section 16 of the PFMA, is it sufficient? Is it good enough? And we need to consult with National Treasury on that. But in my view, Chair, I think leveling the playing field between National Treasury and Parliament, we should have it in there. But please, I'm going to ask members to look at Section 13, sub 6. Work in progress, so we can deal with that. Chair, the PBO, unless it's required of me, I don't want to go into too much detail on this. You know, we can skip that. There's just that ambiguity that I spoke about last time. And there's two options: either we align it to the PFMA or the Financial Management of Parliament Act, or we make it a total entity, and that's something that clarity must be. Yes, I saw them on the way here, but they're in the Appropriations Committee today.
To do, by the way, perhaps I should explain this. I think this is a very limited discussion, because we're going to cover the same ground again. But I'm going to speak to the co-chairs and tell them that, you know what, you can't have us meet here, and then we'll go through the whole process again. But that's between the three chairs and me, right? So I will try to do that. So today we're not sitting here till 1 o'clock. It's unnecessary. So just skip that, because I'd like them here.
Chair, we're getting now to consequential matters. I think, given the scope of today's presentation, let me not go through the bill. They're there. They mark everything as tracked in the bill. A lot of it, and I've just tried to summarize it in bullet form, a lot of it is language used that can be improved to make it more consistent with Parliament's use of language. We've got a few new definitions. We refer there to an advisory board, which is an interesting concept to manage the PBO or assist with the oversight of the PBO. Certain corrections that were made, which just speaks for themselves, and latest terminology, the budget office helped us with latest terminology in terms of terminology, in terms of what's in your strategic plan and what exactly must you show to Parliament to understand the strategic plan. So it's really, these are not substantive issues, it doesn't change much meaning, but we've gone through a process with PBO as well as other officials and just to clear up the act, but they're all tracked in the act. If someone wants to look at that and have any problems with it, it's there. Chair, at the last presentation I made on the 8th of Feb, we spoke about the norms and standards for provincial legislature. I have a view on it, Chair. It's that we don't really need this because of the way the budget works, because we're not a federation, because we are a unitary state, and the way Treasury norms and standards operate and how the budget gets to provinces. Provinces are in any event constrained by the fiscal framework, the national fiscal framework. They can have their own provincial fiscal framework, but they're constrained with the Division of Revenue Bill, Financial and Fiscal Commission's recommendations that's made. Everything sort of fits in. We also read the Intergovernmental Fiscal Relations Act. It sets it out clearly that you're not free entity as a province to make a financial bill or the way you want it. It's all depending on where you get your revenue from, the little bit you get from the province, and the bulk that you get from the division of revenue bill. You cannot actually have a procedure, an amendment procedure, that goes into the area where you're going to change policy that's going to affect national government. That is my view on it. So I don't think we need norms and standards that are enforceable, or peremptory norms and standards like there are at the moment. The most one can say is to give guidelines, and with the resource constraints I know my colleagues have in certain provinces, I think it's also a bit dangerous to set up the procedure the way it is set up, that you must have, for instance, separate committees dealing with various things and how they must report and so on. So that's my view from a legal point. I know politically there might be different views, so it's there for discussion. But as it is, there is a constitutional question that's hanging over some of the peremptory norms, which we need to resolve. And Chair, the way forward, that's the cut and copy of the previous one. We're busy, as I've said, we've handed out the draft bill. We're busy developing that. We have not consulted with Treasury, the technical task team. I need to pull them in closer. We need to set up a meeting with them. In any case, I think there was not really scope for various reasons to have an engaged discussion with them on this. In any event, not before we've finalised this draft bill, so they can look at concrete issues. So we're right for that, to meet with them. And I think the next step is for the committee to actually satisfy itself with the draft bill and say this is something that we can publish for public comment. And we can work on timelines for that to ensure that we then have enough scope to pass it and get it signed off before the NTBP is end of October. Thanks, Chair.
Again, repeat, we're not having exhaustive discussion because unfortunately we've got to have full committees. I think the idea of a set timelines is important. You see, one of the options may be to bring a smaller team from the full committees together instead of us, you know, sitting here and look what's happened today. But look, I'll speak to my colleagues. I don't think we can do anything. We cannot do anything until the two committees, at least on the Ethiopian NA side and also the Appropriations Committee, agree. But in the meanwhile, we can mandate you to proceed and engage with National Treasury. I don't see that's a problem. Any problem with that?
No.
Yeah, because you're taking no decisions. You probably get some technical ideas. And you'll come back to us and say, hey, on reflection, maybe this is not the way forward. All right, over to members. Anybody who's talking? Yes, Pinky, Mr. Mayor? Yeah.
No, Chair. I think we really want to welcome the report as tabled by Advocate Jenkins. I think I still remember how tedious the process was, especially when we started as a committee, how tight some of these things were, and we didn't want to do malicious compliance, for lack of a better word, when we're engaging on the money bills. And I think the way the approach is coming, it's going to help in a big way. I really want to appreciate what the legal team has done. Just on and Chair, I think I agree with you because some of the things also overlap to appropriation and other committees. So I agree with you that we have a smaller team. I wouldn't mind to volunteer from the ANC side to be part of that team that can look at some of these things. But also agree that Advocate Jenkins must still have a parallel process with the technical team from Treasury so that some of these things go concurrently. From what you have suggested. There's one clarity, Chair, because you remember when you started, you said English is your mother tongue. It's not my mother tongue. I'm not sure I understand what this is saying, and I would want you to to explain so that I don't pretend to be understanding it nicely. It is on timelines around the appropriation bill, where it speaks about conditional appropriation, pass the bill within 4 months after financial year begins. I'm not sure I understand what that means practically. And maybe if I can be clarified. English is not my mother tongue.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to make some brief comments. I haven't obviously had the advantage of seeing the presentation, but I did look at the discussion document. Just let me make a few comments on paragraph 4 of the discussion document. There we suggest that the chairpersons of the four committees engage with the presiding officers on the whole question of the governance framework of the PBO. I think that should be a bipartisan or multi-party group, because as you know, the PBO and its independence is a major issue for the opposition. As long as we are not able to exercise our section, is it 15.3 rights in the appropriation bill, we are not able as the opposition and as the bill allows in practice to access the PBO. So I would think that I would propose that that be some kind of multi-party group. That's the first point. The second point on paragraph 9, which deals with the fiscal framework and proposes broadly a flexible approach. I think that there's significant risks to the flexible approach. As Advocate Jenkins points out, the risk is that we as Parliament, in respect of the budget, could become rudders. That is the term that we use. And I, with respect, don't agree with Advocate Jenkins. I think the risk of this Parliament being rudderless is now greater. And if one looks at programming, major issues in the budget in this Parliament or the next Parliament could become a major issue, are now in fact not being resolved in programming or in the plenary or by Parliament. They're in fact being being resolved in the courts. That's the reality. And so I think that we should. I would favour a rigid approach, but with timelines that allow us to properly consider the budget. So that's on paragraph 9. On paragraph 11, which deals with the whole question of timeframes, again. Your proposal, as I understood it, is that there be a flexible approach and the three instruments be introduced simultaneously and then but reported on separately. I think, again, there's a risk, and even although there might be merit to the proposal, I think there's a consideration which you may be missing and which I think would be useful to discuss with Treasury. And that is the whole question of budget risk. If we have a flexible approach taken together with sequencing based on referral, not reporting, what we then introduce is a huge element of, or a new element of budget risk. In other words, from the rating agency's point of view and the market's point of view, for a significant period of time, there's significant uncertainty about the budget. And that may introduce budget risk into our sovereign credit rating. So what the ratings agencies and markets are looking for is certainty. And so I think what we could consider is locking down the fiscal framework in the first instance in a reasonable period of time, which would give everybody certainty, both Parliament, the ratings agencies, the market, and the executive branch of government, and then proceeding with the appropriations bill and the division of revenue bill. I would really suggest, Advocate Jenkins, if you discuss the whole question of budget risk and our sovereign credit rating with Treasury, which I think is a consideration this committee must take into account. We do not want to, as Parliament, introduce a new element of risk in the sovereign credit rating. So that's the second point. The third point is about think I've stated our position on the PBO. I mean, we think we need to an institution which is, so far as possible, independent. But we can discuss that in detail later. Our experience, Chair, is, and we as the opposition are not able to access the PBO. We have a right under Section 15(3) of the Act for individual members to approach the PBO to do research. They flatly refuse to entertain any of our requests because, in their view, all requests must be made by committee. That is a situation that cannot be allowed to continue. I think we need to revisit. My final comment, I would propose to Advocate Jenkins that we consider introducing a new priority area. And the new priority area arises from just experience in practice. It's all very well to have clarity on the timing and frequency, but where there's also a lack of clarity is in how to propose or what process to follow if one is going to propose amendments on the budget. So in practical terms, in budget 2016, the opposition put 398 amendments to the budget. Our first obstacle was we could not persuade the Chair of Appropriations to provide us with a slot to propose our amendments. That was the first difficulty. The second was I think we ended up, if I recall correctly, and I stand under correction, proposing 400 amendments in 10 minutes. They were never properly deliberated on. Treasury wasn't present. Nobody even seriously considered the amendments. So what I think we should consider is inserting a section prescribing, or broadly prescribing, how amendments should be introduced. In other words, what they should be, just thinking off the top of my head, they should be introduced in writing to the committee chair. The National Treasury should be required to comment on those amendments. The committee needs to deliberate on the amendments, and the committee would either adopt or not adopt those amendments. I think that would go a long way to prescribing a procedure, and I think would assist the Parliament. I'm not suggesting that procedure be prescribed in great detail, but that there be some broad guidelines that would compel, in the first case, the relevant committee to take the amendments, to provide time for those amendments to be considered, and would also compel Treasury to comment on those amendments. Thank you, Chair.
You want to respond, Frank?
Thank you, Chair. I think let me deal with the question on the appropriation bill first. And that's Section 10, if I'm not mistaken. Section 10 requires that subsection 7, Parliament must pass, so that's both houses, with or without amendments, or reject the appropriation bill within 4 months after the start of the financial year to which it relates. So that's the comment I made on last paragraph on that slide. Now, it's a time frame that's there at the moment. As I said, I don't see any reasons why to change it. We've stuck with it. I mean, the financial year begins 1 April. It gives us 4 months. We're always within it. It's not from tabling, it's from the start of the financial year. And it speaks to that, what I said earlier, it speaks to the PFMA, which allows you to spend your budget, 45% of your budget, on the old programs in the new year, although you haven't actually been authorized to do it specifically. Yes, the other issues are interesting issues, quite serious. I think the issue of bipartisanship is something that needs to be considered, because as we are trying to deal with the budget office, and we have the situation at the moment where the four committees have a role to play in advising the budget office, for lack of a better word, when we take it into just the chairpersons, and given the way chairpersons are elected or appointed in parliament, it's not a bipartisan exercise. We've made a comment on the draft bill itself, where we deal with the advisory board, because this is not the first time you've raised it,
yeah.
Honourable Manier, to say maybe a committee. Doesn't have to be the chairperson. Chairpersons sometimes do not have capacity or whatever, or someone within the committee can do the representation of the committee. So I think there's two areas there where one can pay attention to that. The discussion document is just what it is, but if you want to put it somewhere, it might be in the definition of advisory board in the draft book. And as I said, we've made a comment there, and I think that is an issue that can be discussed. We have the example, and just because I worked with it way back, with the Pan-African Parliament, which requires a delegation to the Pan-African Parliament to have at least people from the opposition party in there as well, as well as gender representativity. That's another issue that one can look at. So I think the broader issue, maybe bipartisan is the correct word, but the broader issue is if we have, if the committee accepts that there's going to be an advisory board rather than the four committees. Yeah.
I would rather the PBO is here. I don't think we need to go into a great detail. I can just once again repeat what I said before. Nothing really happened to that part. It's immensely boring. Frankly, I don't want to even serve on the board. No plotting is taking place there. The Politburo doesn't give me a mandate to do anything. Nothing happens. It's a total waste of time. Actually, it's like a technical exercise. Half the time I'm busy doing MC and AC. And that's what I do. Nothing happens to the board. Right. So on the matters, you see. Yeah, you sort of have this idea that we're plotting there against the opposition and all that. So I'm responding to that. There's no such thing, man. And you know what? You must get real. No way. Maybe in Nicaragua in the early years of the post-revolutionary situation or in the transitional stage, where about the government of national unity? You have to win an election. You know something? If I ever, not in my lifetime, but if I ever was where you are and you were here, you know what? Yeah, no. That's canvassing, you know that, right? I mean, really. Now, let me tell you something. I'd be so relieved, you know, not to do so. Win an election, if you're a majority party, bear the burden of attending boring meetings, right? And even if you have an opposition member there, what do you think you're going to be able to do? Right, with the six of us here and one of you, what are you going to do? Right, you blabber all the time, you say, yeah. So we vote on it. So, fine, you know what? A lot of the things you say are underpinned by a particular notion of what an opposition party is. It's certain particular contingent phases in certain societies that happen. Right, it's not going to happen here, given the racialized, genderized, classified, conflicts we have, right? It's not going to happen. So, you know, even if an opposition party like the Communist Party, another party like the Communist Party came to power, it would do the same thing. If some version of a liberal party came to power, it will operate by the norms of democracy. However, there is a way out that he's suggesting. And this thing about you going to the PBO and asking for some research support. That, I think, is credible. Yes, I know, that's the rule. I asked about that. We have never turned down anybody. Your colleagues, also because they're so sensible in the way they approach us, and they, well, frankly, I don't irritate you on day one, but your colleagues told me, by the way, I want to tell you that you even apparently was missing me one day. Hey, I wish Eunice was back. I was
Australian who's heard it from us.
Well, you betcha, but Pulimabe is really and he does need to study.
That's the future, let me tell you. Now, look, now, on a more serious note, you know, I do think there's a case there. Think about this, right? If an opposition member approaches the PBO for technical support, I think they have a case. That's my view, you know. In any case, we're the majority, and if we don't agree with it, we're going to vote on it, right? So I think there you have a case. As for serving on the board and all, I don't think so. But hey, it's not a big deal. Let's hear what other people have to say. I'm not concerned. You see, because you, unlike others in your party, you constantly have this thing of co-governing. That is what it's about, you know. And you've made yourself extremely vulnerable because you do the utterly absurd thing. Hey, there's an advert. There's an advert. I want to see the advert. Hey, it doesn't matter my life. I want to see the advert. The advert that we agreed to, the advert that... Yeah? Where? Yeah. Transformation of the financial sector. All we did was, what can we do? Between you and me, I think. We are looking at the following three things. Let me discuss the thing in the committee. It can't go forward. I think Cedric's probably come. He's our point man, so to speak. Is there such a thing? And we'll change the rules. He laughed, but it's hilarious. The man, I said, I'm not going to do it. Sitting a piece of... You have brought yourself... You see, Brandon raised it. It's not about personality. It's about thinking. You believe in co-governing. Utterly absurd things he will do, right? Utterly, I've never heard of this. It's laughable. You know, we speak to the chairs. They're all hilarious. No other member does this from the opposition, right? So, because it's you, David, not personal, it's your ideological predisposition towards co-governing. Hey, get real. Win an election, which you'll never do, of course. And then you can actually run the committee, right? And really, you know what? What the case you have, which I feel more, let me talk to the study group members and see what they think as a majority. I think they have a case. You know, the parliamentary budget office, your colleagues came to us on three occasions. All three we agreed to. The committee looked at it. The one was on investment. Another one, very good one they had, I forgot, which we looked at. Actually, we agreed with most of the things. Was he a wonderful, even pleasant person? Was he a proposal? Not that George fellow. What's the other guy? Mr. Roth. He came with one. I think George came with one. The third one we said no to because it's premature. So it's not a problem. Why don't you bring it to the committee? I don't want to say in the public domain. My view tentatively depends on what my comrades say, and I also want to hear the other colleagues from the comrades from the other committees. I do think, you know, that even I think it should go through the committee, because I really think that every opposition member is going to run there, convert them. You know, the smaller parties are more vulnerable because they will want to go to the PBO on every little thing, because they don't have like we don't even have one ANC recently. I think the most privileged committee is the DA. They have some, you know. We don't have anybody. I do everything myself. We have Sakele and Antonio serving Parliament, and they're very good. So what I'm saying in short is, no, I think it should come through the committee, but the committee, you know, the ethos should be, the committee should agree unless it can show why that shouldn't be proceeded with. Because then, you know, David, what it'll mean is you can ask about something that's not really being discussed by the committee. You could be using it for the DA's, let's say, campaign. I'm not saying you necessarily. It could be any party. Party B could be using it for its own ideological... For example, I would love to go to the PBO to do some work at the moment. Right? I'm sure Pinky, belonging where she does, will also want to do it, to link to our own political issues. So I do think it should go through the committee, but I think the committee should usually agree to it unless you have a strong case not to. The experience in our committee, Alan, is twice or thrice the DA did come, we agreed to all of them. So I think really, but the norm should be, I think it's fair, you know, everybody who makes a reasonable request, maybe we can even put some limits, it mustn't be in the bill, you know, that there must be a sort of PBO rule, set of rules negotiated with the board and whoever. And you know, when I say say the board doesn't do anything, I don't mean literally we don't. We have to look at the reports, we have to approve them. But it's pretty boring stuff.
Sure. I mean, Chair, I do have an ideological predisposition. It's not co-government. It's called multi-party democracy. The fact of the matter is, there's no rule that constrains the committee to or constrains the PBO and would cause them to have to only do research referred to them by committee. If you look at the Act, members may approach the PBO. We have that
before.
Right.
Can I give you the answer? I did discuss this with them. Their answer is they don't have the capacity. And if they allow it to...
Well, they never have the capacity for the opposition.
Well, actually, no, that's not true. But look, why don't we wait for them to be here? Because we're going to cover the same ground again. I think, though, we're not going to, like, cover the same... Why don't we summarize, Pinky, if you agree, on the issue of serving on the board... Pinky, I can predict the category of board agree. Our tentative view is no. Tentative view, right? Because we don't have a mandate to approve. On the issue of individual parties, parties approaching the PBO to do the research they want, on that matter, I think it should go through the committee, but there should be some notion that the committee should generally agree if it falls within the mandate of the committee's work, even if it disagrees with the opposition party's reasons for doing it, and so on, something like that. Then on the issue of... okay, you're coming to that and answered. Mr. Mania says they came with so many amendments and all that, and they only had 10 minutes and so on. And I don't know how you're going to come to that. You're going to, yeah. So let's hear you first.
Chair, let me just go straight to that sort of the new priority area suggestion to a broad section describing how amendments must be introduced. Chair, I want to agree, first of all, that the Act doesn't have a separate standalone section. That we know that, and it sets out this process where it has to start with your BRRRs and you must make your suggestion on the NTBPF, and if then the new budget doesn't include it, that's when a committee can raise it, and even in that circumstances you must apply all those other provisions to say, is it going to affect service delivery, how is it going to affect future generations, etc., etc. Chair, I think that's also what you alluded to when you said there's these onerous requirements that you have to comply with. So we have to look at that. We haven't made changes. But what we need to do is basically have a clutch there, something that, without letting, if I may, and I'm not literally, without stripping the gearbox, we need to allow it to go into a different gear at certain spots. So we need to have that sort of emergency handbrake or emergency gear that we can go in if things must happen, and Parliament needs to get that power. But at the same time, Chair, so we can, okay, just with the new priority area, one can do it two ways. One can look at it to say, well, there's a requirement to have certain rules set up, to have rules to say how a committee or how a member or a political party can then make or propose amendments, not make amendments, but propose amendments to it, and how a committee must deal with it. I would be hesitant to open a gate to say, well, this is going to stall the committee. I mean, 400 amendments, whilst we want to allow Parliament with this procedure to do its work properly, you don't want to create problems for Parliament where you can't, again, not have compliance with the Act, because that's what we have at the moment. So it's something that I think needs a lot of work. If we want to put something in there that for every amendment that's proposed, there must be the following process. Committee must consider it, must be tabled. National Treasury must respond to it within a certain time. Committee must take a decision. It must be included in the report or not. I mean, I think if we unpack it like that and we just speak slowly, you can see what's going to happen. So, well, it might happen. Okay. So, So we can look at that and come with proposals. My colleague Michael Prince and I can discuss it. Chair, there's just two or three things I need to discuss. First, the issue of locking the fiscal framework down before we deal with the division of revenue and appropriation, well, if I understand that suggestion correctly, that is the way we have it at the moment. I think if it's in order with the committee, we will discuss that with National Treasury. I see it, we're talking here of a period of 2 to 3 weeks while Parliament is dealing with the fiscal framework. I want to remind members that the fiscal framework must still be passed before we can pass the division of revenue and the appropriation bill. So there is that certainty, and the issue in subsections 4 is still there, that there must be consistency with the fiscal framework. And that, this, I mean, I thought, and I'm aware of the risk, that would mitigate that risk. But let me hear what Treasury have to say. I'm certainly not going to put myself out there to say I know the effect of it. But at the same time, I do feel, yes, quite vulnerable. Suddenly I can affect the credit rating of South Africa. But we junk status already, so sorry, Chair. But in any event, it is something that the committee and Parliament will be responsible for. Yes. Chair, the timelines, the three things you mentioned earlier, the timelines are there, the onerous requirements, I've received some instructions from you, what we can look at to see, is there a way of creating this. Chair, I just want to ask about the two reports. You say the fiscal framework, we adopt the fiscal framework, there's a debate on it, and when we get back later to the division of revenue and the appropriation bill, there's a debate again about all these issues. If I'm understanding that, then that is a problem. If that is an issue, then one will have to try and speak to the National Assembly staff and see how that can be done. But if I'm hearing the concern correctly, that there's a duplication in the House.
Same debate.
Okay. Thanks, Jill.
Close, right? On the following understanding. One is that I will negotiate with the other committee chairs, excuse me, about at least having one meeting with the older committee. Then we go the route of a subcommittee, maybe. A multi-party subcommittee, obviously. Secondly, that, you know, as far as finance committee members go, you know what could help? Maybe because you're relatively independent, right, Frank? You can give a summary. When we meet, instead of covering all this ground, give a summary of what came out and the tentative views of the ANC, the tentative views of what we said, right? So we don't, like, repeat everything. It's like a report. You know, if you can write it, it's great. 2 pages is enough. On the issue of, to summarize, on the issue of serving on the board, it seems to me it's only fair that, well, at this stage, it should be the chairs of the committee. And then if the Communist Party wins the next election, then the Communist Party will chair. And if it gives some chairs to other people, then, you know, that's the way it is. So, but there should be some sort of advisory thing, as you said, right? Beyond that and so on. Well, we can find some compromise and so on. I don't know. The second thing is, on the issue of parties, you see, we also got to be careful what we're talking about here. Are we talking about individuals within parties? Because even the opposition parties, there's extremes, you know, of approach. So, you know, it must be a party. It can't just be an individual. So I don't know how the wording is. I've forgotten in the Act. We should look at that carefully. And if we're not going to do that, then that's what happened in the book, because it's not fair. But it seems to be some measure of access should be there for all parties. Then the next issue is we're not being too prescriptive, right? So, you know, when we're proposing Mr. Mayor, even if we agree with him, we're not going to put it down in the bill, you know, in that length, for what you do. Fourthly, you know, my own observation is that you can't come with 400 changes to a bill. I mean, it's ridiculous. What is it? It's showing off. Basically, that's what it is. It's like trying to impress the public. People have a right to do that, but Parliament, you can't, with the world-class treasury we have here, you can't tell me you have 400 amendments, right? Because really, you've looked at the MTBPS, you've looked at the MTEF, all of us had a say on this, right? It's not like suddenly treasury came. You know, you don't have no idea what they're going to do. 400 changes, how? Oh, please. Personally, I think that's not, doesn't matter. So what? So it might impress somebody or there, but you know, quite frankly, I mean, that's nonsense, right? So basically, what you've got to do is look at something that says if there are amendments, and there are some guidelines on what we mean by these things. Like, not this. This is like filibustering, sort of. You can literally just bring the whole system to a gridlock, if there's such a word, right? Or deadlock, or I don't know what's the word. So I think some temperate provision on how to deal with this matter. And then, you know, I don't know how we do, because this is a parliament's bill, but you can, the rules committee will have to apply its mind. On the issue of going from the one extreme of having very firm, ridiculous deadlines, and then allowing a complete, like, flexibility. You see, unless the rules committee and the chief of forum and all didn't have so much to do, if they didn't, and secondly, if they really understood what it is that the finance committee does, or the alternative is the rules committee and chief have to consult with the committee chair, then I think one should be careful to strike something between allowing this total flexibility and this extreme rigidity, something in between. I do think it's a transitional thing. It's a practical experience. We may come back to this full 5 years from now when we hear this to adjust it. The other thing is, I don't think we should be too ambitious. In other words, if you're going to introduce narrowly sectarian stroke ideological things that won't sort of gel with the majority in this committee, a lot of the good stuff we're trying to do could also get lost. So I think one should be tempered about what we're seeking to do here. It's a trial and error thing. Really, we passed this bill in 2009, and I gather from those who were here in 2007 or 8, that within a year they discovered problems with it. Yet it is we who passed the bill, Parliament, not the executive. And like within 18 months, the committee was experiencing problems over a bill that it itself passed. You know? So I don't think one should be too ambitious here. I think we should see it in two phases at least. The first phase is we're dealing with now. Let's see how things go over the next 2-3 years, then we'll see. Then we'll deal with it in the second phase. That's how I feel. So you might want to put some of these issues as more like points. They're not like decisions. For people to think about, so that we don't cover the whole ground again. Anything else, people? No, see you tomorrow. Transmission of Finance Sector is a joint committee. Thank you. You want.
So we're done. Can you help me by taking this?